The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee!
Scenes you will witness may appear to border on fantasy.
Game action.
Yes, I was doing
smoking crack cocaine. Drugs.
Game action.
When ignorance was converted
into knowledge.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. I don't suppose we could wait for some alien race to come down and threaten us. Perhaps we need some outside universal threat.
Well, hello, crazy people. It is time for the Thunderbolt. Your crazy look into our crazy world.
Somebody control here again. The reference in that conversation was bogey. It was more of a new recording. Citing the bogey.
The Thunderbolt is proud to broadcast from the state of Washington, the proud home of the banana slug. Yes, kids, the Pacific Northwest is the only place you can find them. So how about we mount a movement for an official state slug? After all, the banana slug is not only colored a really cool psychedelic day glow yellow.
He was in a hospital in Jones County.
But it is the second largest terrestrial slug on the entire planet.
You said your friend Kevin.
Yeah, man. We bad.
He remained alive in hospital, but he's okay now. You don't seem to be too.
Native Americans used to eat them, too.
The only way that I can explain Kevin is quite a bit younger than me. And Kevin had never known much fear. But I've known fear a lot of times, and nothing like that. And I've known fear many times before. And it's fear that you can't even explain.
All right. This is the Thunderbolt for December 13th, 2024. Normally, I have a new show for the third week of the month, but I'm taking a short break this month, so I've got some reruns for you this week. And before you get too disappointed by that fact, keep in mind that I do not reignite Thunderbolts unless I like them a lot. In addition, now we're going to a replay of a 2016 piece that featured that geriatric favorite, the toothless old grandpa. Enjoy! So fortunately, we have the toothless old grandpa ready to come tell us about some billionaires and some ballot bandits. So let's give a Viagra-fueled cheer for the toothless old grandpa! Yeah, you're a hit, Grandpa. So tell us what you're going to rock us with this week.
Well, son, I got to thinking about my future career, and I decided it would be unwise to become typecast into a certain genre. And so I'm going to switch things up, and I got me some jazzy African bluegrass fusion action going for you this week, and I'm going to lay it all out on your asses.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah. But you see, it goes like this.
As far as the billionaires purchasing your government, the brothers Koch alone have already pledged to spend $750 million purchasing politicians, the bulk of which will be going to the Republicans, though like all wise gamblers, they also buy a few Democrats to hedge their bets. And can you guess who is the number one contributor to the Republican cause, at least on the record? Yes, kids, that great dishonor goes to a gentleman whose name you virtually never hear on the media machine. So let's give a big, heartfelt Thunderbolt raspberry for Paul Singer.
Yep, that Paul Singer.
The very personification of vulture capitalism. Let me tell you, kids, that Paul Singer represents the cutting edge in purchasing third world debt for pennies on the dollar and then using ruthless, cutthroat, no-holds-barred methods for collecting upon that debt. Paul Singer has completely drained the treasuries of several third world countries, literally impoverishing millions of people in the process who hadn't been doing all that well to begin with. All so Paul Singer could increase his already obscenely large personal fortune. In this one single man is contained every ugly, reprehensible, cruel, and murderer's nastiness that so personifies our wonderful system, that so lavishly rewards thieves and so severely punishes the honest. Argentina even managed to negotiate terms for their debt, wherein a large part of it was forgiven due to the fact that this debt had been accumulated by a previous right-wing government that had been utterly corrupt. The IMF and even Goldman Sachs was ready to go along with this deal, but Paul Singer refused to honor this arrangement, and he insisted upon full payment of Argentina's debt, even though Mr. Singer had himself purchased that debt from a discount broker for pennies on the dollar. And by the other way, if the Trans-Pacific Partnership passes into law, then Paul Singer will be freed of the few largely token restraints upon his vile endeavors that do still currently exist. And meanwhile, out in Nutcase Land, Joe Arpaio just endorsed Donald Trump for president. Perfect. Now, Joe Arpaio is the infamously and overtly racist sheriff of Maricopa County in Arizona, which includes Phoenix. Now, Sheriff Arpaio was one of the central movers and shakers in passing all of those overtly racist laws against immigrants that were so controversially passed in Arizona a few years back. However, when considering clowns such as Donald Trump or Joe Arpaio, you must remember that there is a huge machine behind these men, and that machine is no frigging joke. The Koch brothers provide major funding to Mr. Arpaio, for instance. In spite of the image that Mr. Arpaio intentionally projects, he is no hick sheriff from the boonies. He is funded through an organization called a Donors Trust. Now, when the feds started coming down on Joe Arpaio like a ton of bricks for his overtly racist policies as sheriff, the Donors Trust provided the good Mr. Arpaio with an attorney. Now, this attorney's name was Chris Kobach. That's K-O-B-A-C-H. Now, get this. In addition to being Mr. Arpaio's attorney, Mr. Kobach is also the Secretary of State for the state of Kansas. Mr. Kobach is thus in a position to purge lots and lots of minority voters from voter rolls. Which brings us back to the ballot bandits. Yes, kids, they're back. Now, if you happen to have the same name as a convicted felon, or even if you happen to have the same name as someone else who also voted, then you may find your name purged from the voter rolls if you live in any of 29 Republican-controlled states. Well, these states have gotten together, and they are all cooperating in their various voter purges. Yes, kids, they have brand new central databases for thwarting those dastardly double voters. Now, this new system is called Interstate Cross-Check. And Greg Palast has discovered that Interstate Cross-Check has a list of over 7 million voters in their new central database that they plan to purge from the voting rolls for voting twice in any of the 29 states that are participating in this new Interstate Cross-Check system. Now, voting twice in the same election is a serious federal crime, subject to a 5-year prison sentence. Yet in spite of having 7 million people accused of committing this crime, not a single one has been prosecuted. They even have their addresses and ID numbers. And I'm sure it's a coincidence, but the overwhelming majority of these 7 million names are black or Hispanic, and they are even starting to purge Asians, since Asian support has shifted over to the Democrats over the years. Now, if your name is Fauntleroy Wentworth III, and if you have the right zip code, you will probably not be purged from the voter rolls. However, if your name is Terrell Washington, and if you live in the wrong zip code, then you probably will be purged from the voting rolls. Because another Terrell Washington voted in Alabama last year. Now, Muhammad is a very common name in the Muslim community. And that name is also on this list. Now, Interstate Crosscheck has determined that all of these Mohammeds are the same Mohammed, voting hundreds of times. And so there will likely be dozens, if not hundreds, of Mohammeds who will be unable to vote in the next election, even though they are fully qualified to vote, and even though they have a constitutional right to vote. Among some of the other names to be purged are John Brown and Jose Rodriguez. Now, Interstate Crosscheck is also in force in two of the central swing states in the next election, North Carolina and Ohio. And Ohio has already targeted 675,000 names in almost exclusively black areas of the state for removal from the voting rolls. Alabama began requiring all of their voters to obtain driver's licenses or state-approved IDs. Then, they closed nearly all of the DMVs in all 10 of the majority black counties in the state of Alabama. Now, there is a black state senator from Alabama whose name is Hank Sanders. 50 years ago, Mr. Sanders walked across the Edmund Pettus Bridge with Martin Luther King to win his right to vote. However, Senator Sanders had just been purged from the voting rolls of Alabama. Senator Sanders noted that it is sort of like he is now marched once again over the Edmund Pettus Bridge. Only this time, he is marching backwards. Now we move full circle, for it turns out that this interstate cross-check system is being operated out of the office of the Secretary of State of the state of Kansas, that Koch-funded attorney who represents Joe Arpaio, Chris Kobach himself. What a small world these people live in.
I'll be damned if you didn't do it again, Grandpa. Way to go. I like your new style. So, the Greeks are usually credited with inventing democracy. There is some debate about that, and regardless whether or not they invented it, well, they did indeed have a government with some democratic aspects to it. we must always keep in mind that Greece was yet a slave society. It was patriarchal. It was violent and warlike. It was xenophobic. And it was elitist. When it came to gods, though, the Greeks had it down. Athena, for instance, was a Greek goddess of war and macrame, two very handy skills. It was Athena, in fact, that taught spiders how to weave their webs. I'll bet you didn't know that. Athena also happens to be my personal favorite when it comes to deities. Athena came from a very illustrious family. She was the daughter of Zeus himself, for instance. And amongst her many siblings were people such as Aphrodite, Apollo, Dionysus, and even Helen of Troy. Now, gee, I wonder what their dinner conversations were like. Athena also tended to provide her divine support to heroes who were engaged in just and noble causes. Which is another thing I really like about her. She was also prized for her intelligence and fairness. And she was also, of course, rumored to be epically hot. Yowch! And if humans marrying Greek gods didn't almost always end up with the human dying horribly or suffering some insane torture for the rest of eternity, then I might be trying to track down Athena's phone number. Should definitely be careful about what I wish for, though. Because Athena was also fully capable of unleashing some pretty serious violence. However, here's the thing. Athena's violence was never gratuitous. She always deployed violence very strategically, and she always applied it with very strict discipline. Athena's favorite weapon was, in fact, her shield. In addition to her many other extraordinary siblings, Athena also had a brother named Ares. And Ares was also a god of war. However, Ares was a god of a much different sort than his sister. For Ares basically represented the very embodiment of senseless mass slaughter. Ares and his sons were, in fact, a psychopathic gang of mass murderers. They were also fond of doing stuff like tying someone up under a blazing sun for eternity with ants constantly eating their face. Or something else equally reprehensible. The Aries gang was described by others as being overwhelming, insatiable in battle, destructive, and man-slaughtering. Aries' sons, Phobos, or fear, and Deimos, or terror, along with his lover Enyo, discord, usually accompanied Aries on his war chariot as they descended like rolling thunder, sowing death and destruction upon an endless multitude of hapless victims. Yes, rather than a shield, Aries' preferred weapon of choice was a battle axe. I wonder how often Ares and his sons showed up for dinner. Athena and her sidekick Heracles were constantly thwarting the Ares gang's evil plots. And Heracles totally kicked Ares' ass a couple of times. I think that what the Greeks were trying to tell us is that we need Athena to counter Ares. The fact that Ares is a man, while Athena is a woman, I think is also significant to this analogy. Anyway, I mention all of this because I like to flatter myself by considering the thunderbolt to be a small component of Athena's shield. So the thunderbolt will continue shielding you from evil after a quick station break. Whilst speaking of an early colonial settlement known as Marymount, the American literary critic Leslie A. Fiedler said this: "Sometimes one wonders what would have happened if it had survived this beatnik colony in the 17th century New England woods, presided over by university bohemians full of classical quotations, rum, and deviltry." So I spend a lot of time talking about history. That is because history provides the context for the present. Understanding the past is a necessary step to understanding the present and to predicting the future. Studying history is useful because while history doesn't really repeat itself, there are definite patterns that emerge over and over again. And the insights that studying these patterns provides can be applied to the task of understanding the present and to predicting the future. So it turns out that the strain of American Puritanism that permeates our culture to this day began right out of the gate. Two of the first European settlements in Massachusetts were called Plymouth and Mount Wollaston, later renamed Mary Mount. Now, Plymouth was populated with dour fundamentalist Christian Puritans, while Marymount founded by a gentleman named Thomas Morton, started out as a settlement of indentured servants. However, Mr. Morton quickly transformed it into a bohemian, free-thinking, free-living paradise of freedom and justice. Yes, kids, runaway slaves, indentured servants, and various other marginalized people began flocking to Marymount, where they were welcomed with open arms and incorporated into their community as full citizens. So the prosperous and easygoing colony soon began attracting escapees from the harsh, hunger-ridden regime of the Plymouth Plantation. In addition, Mr. Morton viewed the Indians as his friends, and he sought to incorporate them into his settlement. He even encouraged intermarriage between the two communities. He referred to the natives as being far more, quote, civilized and humanitarian than his intolerant European neighbors over in Plymouth. Rather than friends, the Puritans, on the other hand, viewed the natives as hostile savages. So the merry partiers of Marymount had no compunctions about criticizing the dour Puritans and their oppressive ways. Mr. Morton himself, in fact, often made up mocking names for the Puritan leaders. The diminutive commander of their local militia, a man named Miles Standish, Mr. Morton referred to as Captain Shrimp. And he called the pompous John Endicott, that great swelling fellow, Captain Littleworth. Yes, kids, Marymount was a multicultural, anti-hierarchical, anti-colonial paradise of freedom and celebration. So the Puritans over in Plymouth were, of course, very upset about all of this. Like most religious fundamentalists, they did not take well to criticism. And like most religious fundamentalists, they felt that they had the right to force their ugly, bigoted religious superstitions upon everyone else. The Puritans considered the goings-on over at Marymount to be pagan debauchery. Since the fact that pagan debauchery was indeed exactly what was going on over at Marymount, then that fact helped them to make this argument. But then, they became much more upset when they learned that the Marymounters were selling guns to the native tribes. For the Puritans considered this to be an existential threat to their safety. However, there is ample evidence that what the Puritans were really upset about was the fact that Marymount was seriously threatening the fur monopoly that Plymouth had been trying to establish. For you see,
Mary Mount had also quickly surpassed Plymouth to become the fastest growing and most prosperous colony in New England, both as an agricultural producer and in the aforementioned fur trade. That the natives far preferred dealing with the merry jokesters of Mary Mount to the openly racist assholes of Plymouth, and most people in general just preferred living in the lighthearted and merry town of Mary Mount as opposed to the dark and oppressive hostility of Plymouth. After stories of a particularly paganish May Day celebration, complete with North America's first maypole, began circulating in Plymouth, the Puritans finally took action. Miles Standish, aka Captain Shrimp, marched his men into Mary Mount and arrested Mr. Morton. Since Thomas Morton was far too connected either to imprison or to execute him, they instead exiled him to an offshore island until a ship could come take him back to England. William Bradford, the Puritan governor, wrote with horror in his History of Plymouth Plantation. They set up a maypole, drinking and dancing about it many days together, inviting the Indian women for their consorts, dancing and frisking together like so many fairies, or furies rather, and even worse practices. It was as if they had anew revived and celebrated the feasts of ye Roman goddess Flora, or ye beastly practices of ye mad Bacchanalians.
Wow, really? Sounds like a blast to me. Wish I could have been there. However, whilst back in England, Mr. Morton got his revenge by leading a successful campaign to revoke Plymouth's charter, which the Puritan-hating King Charles I was very willing to do. Then, in 1637, Morton became a political celebrity with the publication of New English Canaan, based upon the notes of his legal campaign. In 1642, Mr. Morton attempted to return to Massachusetts. Now, this was just as the English Civil War was kicking into high gear, and just as King Charles was about to lose his head. But Mr. Morton found his colony demolished and scattered, and he found his Native American friends had been wiped out by disease and by Puritan muskets. And then he was arrested and charged with being a royalist agitator and imprisoned over the winter. However, when no evidence was presented, Mr. Morton was released the following spring. But his imprisonment had destroyed his health, and in addition, he was cut off from his English supporters by the Civil War, so he basically retired to Maine, where his health soon failed completely, and he finally died at age 71. one can't help but join Mr. Fiedler in wondering. Had they escaped Puritan persecution and thrived, would the Merry Mounters have overshadowed the dour Puritans and spawned a less murderous and more egalitarian history of America than the one with which we are currently cursed? And indeed, one cannot help but wonder. Would all Americans have had a healthier environment to adapt to?
It's time to get to work now, kids.
So that's it for the news and commentary section for this week's show. There is a revolution happening right outside your door right now, so if you're wanting to get right to that, then I wouldn't blame you. But if you have a few more minutes, I'm going to round out the hour with some music. This is a band that my daughter turned me onto and that totally blew my mind when I saw them live. This band is called Google Bordello, and the best way to describe their music is that it is sort of a fusion between Ukrainian folk music and punk rock. Enjoy.
If we are here not to do what you and I wanna do and go forever crazy with it, why the hell we are even here? Good old days, they are today, they are tomorrow. It's a stupid thing we say, cursing tomorrow with sorrow. Down! Well, we stand here in a row, looking like a bunch of heroes. I know that deep inside, nothing more but a bunch of zeros. Yeah!
Second time I read the Bible, I was thinking it's alright, man. I was thinking, ай да ай да, и в душе все на гитарках. Ай-яй, shadows of forbidden ancestors, come with me to the future now!
was Super Toronto. Before that, we had Ultimate from Google Bordello. We'll see you next week.
The Thunderbolt is a production of Dancing Angel Media, which is solely responsible for the content. Neither the stations that air the Thunderbolt, their sponsors, their members, their underwriters, nor anyone else that has much to do with anything else in any way, is responsible for the content of the Thunderbolt. Nor do they necessarily agree with the views expressed on the Thunderbolt. If you have any comments, or if you wish to express an opposing opinion, you should send an email to dana98501@gmail.com. And we will make arrangements. And I hope that you have a day.
And you may want to grab a pen or something, because I'm about to give you some information. If you like what you hear here on the Thunderbolt, then the Thunderbolt archives are stored at dana98501.wordpress.com. That's DANA98501, which is the downtown Olympia zip code, .wordpress.com. And if you would like to continue hearing the Thunderbolt, you can contribute to our cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. And
thank you very much.